Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at Deloitte.com/US/engineering advantage.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Welcome to the Vergecast, the flagship. Actually, today is not a flagship. Today is like a skiff. It's a bonus episode that we're recording. I am Dieter Bohn, and I am joined today by Tom Warren and Dan Seifert. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello from Brexit land.
Oh, gosh. We're not going to talk about Brexit because it's too painful. Instead, we're going to talk about other pain. I was thinking that, you know, Microsoft dropped a bunch of new Surface computers, and they were really fascinating, important Surface computers because in a lot of different ways, they tried to do some really new stuff. And Microsoft is also doing new stuff with the way that they're having people build apps and so on. I've been referring to it in the newsletter. We've been writing about it on the site. But there's so much stuff here that I didn't feel like we could really capture all of it in our reviews. There's so much stuff that we left on the cutting room floor that I wanted to record a bonus episode. So I guess to get started, Tom, can you talk a little bit about this year's round of hardware from Microsoft and how it felt different? And I'm not even getting into the stuff about the Neo and the Duo and the future-looking stuff. I'm talking about just the stuff that they actually released.
Yeah, so they did three things. They did the Laptop 3, the Surface Pro 7, and the X, and they're all kind of different in their own sort of ways. So the Laptop 3, they obviously went for USB-C, you know, all the sort of upgrades you'd expect, but then they threw in this one where they did an AMD laptop on the 15-inch version. And similar to that, on the Pro X side, you know, you got the Pro 7, which is Intel. Looks the same as a Pro 4. I mean, even a Pro 3, kind of, really.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking 5 years of the same hardware, essentially. So that's pretty much, everyone should probably know what that's all about. But it's got USB-C now. But they also did another one, the Black Surface Pro X, which has a Qualcomm chip inside.
Right.
It's not. It's basically an SQ1 processor that they've co-engineered with Qualcomm, and it's basically an 8CX processor inside.
Right.
So yeah, that is the hardware lineup. That's their holiday lineup, and some earbuds as well. But we're not talking about those because we don't have them yet.
I'll admit I forgot about the earbuds. So thank you for reminding me.
Well, I mean, how could you? They're giant reflectors on the side of your head. How could you possibly miss them?
They're Necco wafers.
They've also really annoyed Will I Am.
So. Oh, man. We're giving them a good
review.
Actually,
we're derailing into Will I Am litigation discussion.
We're definitely going to give these headphones a good review because they annoyed Will I Am. Like, that's absolutely happening. Well, let's get the laptops out of the way. Dan, you reviewed them. The 13.5-inch one, you had a meme headline. Congratulations. You said have a normal one.
I snuck it in.
Yeah. Tell me about this laptop. It seems like it's a Surface laptop. They put a USB port on it instead of DisplayPort at the end.
Basically, yes. I mean, so like they swapped that DisplayPort out which was on the first two versions of the Surface laptop, and I'm pretty sure nobody used. Finally, for a USB-C port, which you can do video out and you can charge it through the USB-C port, but it's not a Thunderbolt port, which is an annoying thing, and I think it's going to come up. That annoyance is going to come up again when you talk about the other devices. And then inside of it has the 10th gen Intel Ice Lake processors. So these are quad core chips, really great performance. They have actually really surprisingly good integrated graphics with them. This is not a gaming laptop. It doesn't have a discrete graphics card.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to process a 4K video on this, you could do it. Yeah. I did it in a test, and like it wasn't the worst thing in the world. I wouldn't recommend it for doing that, but like if you need to, you can get it done. They still have the great 3x2 screen. I love the screen on these things. It's the best screen to work on if you're doing productivity stuff on a laptop. Awesome keyboard, awesome trackpad, really great basics. The one that I reviewed is the gold model, which they called Sandstone because of course, but it's gold. And it doesn't have the Alcantara fabric on it, which is kind of like the other big change. They kind of, for a couple of the colors, they dropped the fabric. So this is like, when you use this thing, it feels like you're using a MacBook Air because it's just basically an aluminum deck, which is fine. It's just not like unique as maybe the blue or the silver, which still have the fabric on them.
Yeah, I mean the fabric thing is that's the biggest change, right?
Did you prefer the fabric though?
I prefer the fabric. I think the fabric actually like feels nice under the hands. Like it's not cold to touch. It's not sharp. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel like a every other laptop that you could buy. So it's like kind of unique. But there was like some concerns with durability. You know, if you look at, I've got a Surface Laptop 1 that I got as my work computer 2 years ago, and there are definitely some, you know, handprints in the fabric where it is.
Have you tried cleaning it?
Nah, I don't know. Yeah,
see, whatever. That's on you.
It's called, it's a patina. So like, you know, if you're worried about that, the metal ones are obviously not going to have that issue. Yeah. And then like the other thing that like is less applicable when you first open the box or use the laptop or whatever is that Microsoft apparently made these a lot easier to take apart and repair. So you can actually open them up pretty easily and access the SSD and swap that. You can swap parts like the keyboard easier. iFixit did a whole teardown on it. Then they like, I think, brought the score up from like really low up to something in the mid range. Because I guess the display is still hard to change. You're probably not going to do that. I think you still need to have like a quote authorized service center do that for you, but it's now more possible. Whereas the other one, you basically just had to rip it apart.
Yeah.
So here's a funny thing about the Alcantara, right? So this year's Alcantara, the silver one, like or whatever color you want to call it, is slightly darker than before. Ooh. It's like, yeah,
that is right. Yes, I remember noticing that.
I wonder why they did that.
When we first looked at it. Yeah.
Maybe if you go into a Microsoft store and you pick up one of these things, and it's like beat to hell. Like it looks terrible in the gray sort of silver color. It's terrible. So
they got rid of the red color too, which was like the nicest
color. Yeah. All right. The one other thing I want to talk about here at the 13.5, because it actually applies to every single Surface we're going to talk about today, is they kept the Surface Connect charger thingamajig, the little wing tip, whatever the hell you want to call it, that you magnetically attach into charge. You could still attach dock to it, blah, 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 blah. I feel like they did this bait and switch or something where like they added fast charging, but so far as I know, it only really, really works off the Surface charger. You won't fast charge that well off of USB-C, right?
I got some pretty fast charging speeds off the USB-C port. Yeah, as long as you have a high enough wattage charger.
Okay.
I think what I tested on was like a 90-watt or 87-watt USB-C charger, which is like what you get with a MacBook Pro 15-inch, just because I wanted to see if it did compare to the Surface connector, which is a 65-watt charger. So as long as you're using like a 65-watt or above, you should get some fast charging speeds. But what you won't get is fast charging while you're using the laptop. And that is if you use either the USB-C port or the Surface Connect port, it's going to charge like at normal slow speeds. If you close the lid and let it go to sleep, you can get that like 80% in an hour, or in my test, I got up to 40% in 30 minutes.
I would much rather have another USB-C port than the Surface Connect at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe Tom can speak to this more than I can, but
I like the Surface Connect though, but it makes no sense when there's USB-C, you know?
Right. Like, I think it's like a legacy thing, right? Like Microsoft has a bunch of commercial customers who all bought that terrible Surface dock and they still want to use it. And so the Surface Connect lets them do that. Like, it also has that MagSafe knockoff so that it like doesn't pull your laptop off the table. But I agree. I would much rather have another USB-C port and Thunderbolt 3.
Right.
Because if you had Thunderbolt 3, I could plug in an external GPU and actually do real video editing or maybe gaming if I was so inclined. Mm-hmm. I could use really fast external storage, which is if you are a creator using these for photo or video editing, that's always helpful. It's like 4 times the bandwidth of USB-C. So I think it's a very silly misstep at these price points for Microsoft not to have included Thunderbolt 3.
Yeah, and I think the Kinect is the reason why it doesn't have Thunderbolt 3.
The Kinect?
The Surface Kinect, yeah, because I think it's like to do with whatever the tech specs are on it, like the PCIe lanes and stuff,
right,
that are used by it. So yeah, I don't think they can, unless they've got like a new version of the Kinect. Mm-hmm. It doesn't support past 115 watt stuff like that for charging.
Right.
So it's a little restrictive.
So let's talk about the 15 inch. This laptop, at first, until I like really sat and like pondered it and came to a realization about it, it was the most confusing thing ever. Right. Like, it seems obvious at the start, but then you reviewed it and it turns out it's not like with a MacBook Pro. If you get a 13 inch, you know, like it's a little bit limited. It's just a 13 inch. But if you just want like power and a little bit like, you know, slightly better thermal limits, you can get the 15 inch and that becomes like the power laptop. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting, especially since there's an AMD version, the 15 inch of the Surface Pro to be like the power Surface Pro laptop. And it's. Not
at all. No, it is like if you took the 13.5 inch and just stretched it to a 15 inch chassis. That's really what it is. And like, if you want a MacBook Air like computer, which is what the Surface Laptop is, in a 15 inch size, then the Surface Laptop 3 15 inch is that product. But if you are thinking, oh, I'm going to upgrade to the 15 inch and get more power and I'll have more capabilities and do X, Y, and Z that I can't do on the smaller one, that's not the case at all. And in fact, if you're a consumer, we're going to talk about this more with the AMD Intel differences. If you're just like buying the one that's accessible to you in the 15 inch, it's actually not as good as the 13 inch Intel in terms of performance. So like, you're taking it a step backwards. You're also not getting a bigger battery, which is kind of bonkers to me. Like, the battery inside the 13-inch model and the 15-inch model is the exact same capacity. So that's kind of just nutso to me.
Well, and like the size of it is, if you're not doing anything fancy with like power, then it seems to me that you should at least try and do something cool with like the bezels. But like, this is like a bog standard 15-inch laptop.
Yeah. The bezels are kind of big. It's not super powerful. You mentioned the MacBook Pro differences earlier. And the reason the MacBook Pro 15-inch is so much more powerful is because you can get discrete GPUs and you can, more importantly, get like 45-watt CPUs.
Right.
The CPUs in the 15-inch Laptop 3 are still 15-watt chips. So it's the same class of chips. You're not getting any more power there. And you can't get discrete GPUs. You can get different. If you get the AMD one, you get a different integrated GPU, but it's not as good as Intel's latest GPUs. So like, you're taking a step backwards there.
Right.
So it is kind of baffling. It is kind of like a very niche thing, I think, for someone who wants a thin, light computer that's also a 15-inch screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really what it boils down to. I think the keyboard is fantastic on it. I fell in love with the keyboard first when I reviewed the 15-inch model, because that's the one I did first, and it carries over to the 13-inch model. But the keyboard is tremendous. The trackpad is probably the best trackpad you're going to get in the Windows world, bar none. Like, it's bigger, it's smooth, it tracks great, it's got the best drivers, all that stuff. The screen is great. The touch input on the screen is great. So like, all of those like interaction things are really nice and I'd say best in class in Windows. But then you're limited to the same ports that you get on the 13 inch. You're limited to the same capabilities in terms of like power. You actually get worse battery life because a smaller battery pushing a bigger screen is not going to do you any favors.
Yeah.
And all the other things that we mentioned with the 13. So, and it costs more.
Yeah. Let's talk about AMD then, Tom. What's the deal here?
I don't know. I'm surprised they went with AMD. Like, no one uses AMD on laptops. Like, they do, but they're kind of like few and far between.
Right.
Just because AMD aren't quite there on the mobile side. I don't know why they did it. Like, so Dan obviously had performance problems. A bunch of reviews had performance problems and battery issues and all that sort of stuff. And it was all the sort of stuff that we kind of like feared as soon as you say AMD is going to a laptop.
Right.
And I think they did it because it's just to put pressure on Intel, right? It's just to say, you know, we have another option, even though it's not going to scare Intel like right now. But obviously AMD are trying to be way more competitive in that space. They're like certainly competitive in the desktop space now. They're up there and they're there. But in the mobile space, they're obviously still, you know, still a step behind. So, but I think that was the main reason. Like, and I think it kind of goes back to the Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4, I think they came out at the same time. Mm-hmm. And there was a bunch of sort of Intel-related issues with those chipsets. And Intel kind of struggled to be there. And Microsoft were kind of like the first on, what was it? Was it Kaby Lake back then?
I think it was Skylake.
Skylake, sorry. Yeah, Skylake. I always get the names mixed up.
These names, Intel continues to... I think that people would like Intel twice as much if they had better code names and not just... They just went back to numbers. It's so stupid.
I think that the Pro 4 was sixth generation, so that's a more sane way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. They had a few issues. Apple stayed away from that, notably.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there's no question that they had issues. And I think for that decision probably stemmed from as early as then, where they thought, right, we need to have some sort of other option here.
Yeah. But, I mean, Dan, you used this, right?
Yeah.
How did you feel about it using it? You just wanted the Intel? Like, what was wrong with it?
Well, I mean, it depends what you want to get out of it, right? Like, but I feel like, you know, the model that I reviewed, I believe it was like about $1,600 as configured. And it just didn't feel like a $1,600 laptop should, in terms of like what it should let me do. If I'm going to deal with carrying around this bigger laptop, it does weigh more. It's not the heaviest 15-inch laptop, but it's also not the lightest. And, you know, and I'm going to like pay this price premium for it. Like, I want to be able to do more than just work in office. And the AMD version just kind of let me down. Like, I did some export tests with Premiere Pro, which is, you know, obviously the most popular professional video editing suite on Windows. That was like completely unusable. A few minutes ago, I said that you could use the 13-inch model to render 4K video. You can't do it on the 15-inch with AMD. I even had trouble playing like 4K video from YouTube, like just playback. Like, it would stutter and chop and skip and things like that. And I'm like, this is a brand new laptop in 2019 and it can't play 4K video on YouTube. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, you got to imagine that. I bet you most of that is due to codecs and some sort of...
Oh, absolutely. But like, I'm sure that the codecs is AMD's are not optimized for VP9, which is what YouTube uses. Mm-hmm. And then the Premiere Pro problem is that Intel has QuickSync technology, which helps render H.264 video, and AMD doesn't have it. But at the end of the day, I as the end user or the consumer don't care.
You don't care about that. No.
I just want it to work, and like, I'm gonna buy the one that works.
Yeah, I don't see AMD sort of fixing that like overnight. That's, you know, there's a lot of politics involved in that.
And when Microsoft announced these at their event, a big discussion around the 15-inch model was how powerful it was, and like how it was 2x whatever they were comparing to, and like had the special, you know, AMD Vega 9 and Vega 11 graphics chips on there. And, you know, in like actual things that you want to do with a laptop, though, like they didn't step up.
I mean, Intel's just laughing right now, right? Like,
I would assume so.
They've spent the last year and a half, 2 years, hearing me and lots of other people say, "You suck. You can't get it. You can't get it done. Why are you still stuck on whatever nanometer you're on?" And Apple's running laps around you, and ARM is going to eat your lunch, and AMD's coming for you. And then like, there's finally a laptop that's like mass consumer in theory that doesn't have an Intel chip, and it's just like womp womp, and Intel's just sitting back, just told you so.
Yeah, I mean, the salt in this wound is the fact that Microsoft is selling an Intel version of the 15-inch laptop for $100 more than the AMD one.
Yeah.
And it is on paper only available to business commercial customers, but if you have the link to Microsoft Store, you can just click it and buy it.
Right.
So like that is kind of like the obvious thing caveat there, that like I guess Microsoft knows that apparently it's not good enough for their commercial customers.
The only thing is, if you buy that version, it doesn't come in a box. It comes like stuck to a piece of cardboard.
Oh, that's perfect. That's exactly how I computer boxes are super annoying. There's so much air in them. It's, I don't know. I just had to send back a whole lot of Chromebooks, and it was just like stacked up. The Chromebooks were like, you know, maybe like half a foot tall, but like the boxes were like 6 feet tall when they were all put back in their boxes. So it was super annoying. Anything else you want to say about the laptops?
I think that, you know, just kind of sum it up. If you're looking for a 13-inch laptop and you're looking for a Windows One, I think the Laptop 3 is actually an excellent choice, as long as you don't mind the loss of Thunderbolt 3. It's right up there with what Dell's doing on the XPS 13s and what HP's latest stuff. So I think it is an excellent laptop.
Yeah.
If you are like insistent on getting the 15-inch version, then I strongly recommend seeking out the Intel model and getting that instead. I would not recommend the AMD version to anyone.
I mean, XPS 13 or Surface Laptop 13? Go. I mean, the answer for me is I would buy the XPS, but if my like a family member asked me what to buy, I would probably tell them to buy the Surface because I think the Surface is maybe just slightly more durable and slightly just simpler in certain ways.
I don't know if I would say it's more durable. The XPSs are pretty solid machines.
They got like a flex to them even now. There's like a little bit of a rant to them.
The thing I like about the Surface is it's 3x2 screen. So like if you're using it for productivity, it is a million times more comfortable to use than the XPS 13, which is still using a 16x9 screen.
Right.
That's the big thing about all the Surfaces.
Yeah. And like, so I think for me, that is the clincher. Like, it sucks that I won't have Thunderbolt 3 and my battery life might not be as good as I get with the Dell and I don't have as many port options, but I'm on a screen that I'm much happier to live on for 6, 7, 8 hours a day than I am on the Dell. So
I have one question about the Surface Book, the Surface Laptop before we move on, is the keyboard. So the Alcantara one, it always had like a little bit of a flex, right? Like you kind of get with the Pro. So I'm assuming the other one doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, like I have to caveat this with that I have not used the Alcantara version of the Laptop 3. I've only used the aluminum ones, and it was rock solid. Like this thing is like it is... doesn't flex at all. The keyboard feels great. I read some other reviews where some people didn't really like the travel with it and things like that, but I think the spacing, the size of the keys, the travel is really nice under my fingers. It is like, I put this in the review. I don't know how Microsoft could actually improve this keyboard beyond what it is. I'm sure that's a silly thing to say, and like there definitely could be better things, but in terms of like of the laptops I've used in the past couple of years, this is like my favorite keyboard.
All right, Surface Pro 7. Tom, you reviewed it. Tell me something other than like it's a Surface with new chips.
Well, it has USB-C too.
And oh yeah, sorry, of course.
That's pretty much the only difference. Yeah, so I reviewed the 6 last year, and that was already, you know, sort of pushing it on the sort of samey idea and design. And this is, yeah, it's the same. The big difference, obviously the USB-C, that's cool. It's good to have finally, but it should have kind of really been there last year at least and probably before. But the only other big thing is quick resume. And it's kind of interesting that they've done this year, because I'm sure they could have done this the year before, before that with the chips. But it's interesting that it's happened this year alongside the Qualcomm Surface. And it basically means, you know, you unfold the keyboard away from the display and it instantly resumes. You don't have to touch the button. And it'll go into this sort of light standby state for like, I can't remember how many days it was. It was like 72 hours or something insane. And it will do that, and when it's in that state, it uses like less than 1% battery.
I will say that every Surface I have tested or used until this one has always felt broken. I always thought it was broken because I assumed that when you open the keyboard, it should light up. Because that's how laptops work. That's how the iPad works with its keyboard. So everything works, but with the Surface, you'd have to like open it up.
You have to tap the power. Yeah, and it's weird how you kind of got used to that, and then now that it's changed, it's like oh. Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. This is what it should be doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from that, they've got like studio mics. And they've kind of done that sort of thing across the line. Not really. I haven't really tested it too in depth, so I can't really speak. But like, that's pretty much it in terms of hardware.
Yeah.
Like it's really not that different. Sadly.
I mean, we'll get into this with the Pro X in a minute, but like I bought the Surface Pro 7, which I feel like okay about, but also dumb about, because I'm sure that they're going to finally do a proper redesign next year, and maybe they'll have an LTE option next year. But you know, I've been using the Surface Go for the past year, so I am feeling great about life. I am very, very annoyed that Microsoft does not offer. They've got like I don't know. 8 different specs that you can configure, and they don't have the one that I want. They have black. I want black, i5 because I don't want a fan, like no matter what, and I want 16 gigs of RAM and 256 storage, and they don't offer that. You can get black 8 gigs. You can get black with an i7, but if you want the i5, 16 gigs of RAM, 256, like the platonic ideal mid-range Surface, like this is what everybody wants at a Surface Pro, is that spec. You could only get it in gray.
So I will say that the Core i7, I've used the black Core i7 Surface Pro 6 with the fan, and I don't think I've ever heard the fan.
Really?
Yeah, like I think you'd really have to push it to get the fan going.
I think they are just saving you from the grief of fingerprints on the black model leader.
Well, you don't get so many. So you get way more fingerprints on the Pro X than the black Pro 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on the laptop because they're aluminum.
Yeah.
I mean, don't tell me that because now I'm going to return the Surface Pro 7 i5 and get the black one.
I feel like you've been doing a Surface juggle recently.
Oh, man. So, okay, we're going to get into the Pro X, but just so everybody understands the mockery that I've had to live with because of my own stupidity. Surface Pro X gets announced. I'm like, this is it, I believe. And I pre-ordered one. And then like 2 weeks later, I was like, this is stupid. I shouldn't pre-order this. I mean, I'm good at review it. It's fine. So I cancel my pre-order. And then a week later, I'm like, yeah, but if it's really popular, then if I do want it, then if it goes out of stock, I'm going to have to like wait. And that sucks. So I pre-ordered it again. And then a week later, I'm like, this is stupid. I can't do this. And I canceled my pre-order. And then the next day, the day after I canceled my pre-order, I got the review unit. So just to be clear, I didn't cancel it because of the review unit. Review the thing. Decide, you know what? That's it. I'm buying the Surface Pro 7. I buy the black one with 8 gigs. I tell Tom and Dan, all right, this is what I bought. I really want the black one. I want the i5. I didn't want to spend as much for the i7. I'll be okay with 8 gigs, right? And they're both like... the sound of their like intake of breath came through in Slack.
It's like when a family member tells you they bought a laptop. They tell you the one that they bought, and you're like, "Oh Lord,
yeah."
I'm sure you'll be very happy with it.
Oh my God! So, like that same day, I ordered the good one, the 16 gigs of RAM one, and they both came, and then I had to return the black one. And now you're telling me I should get the i7.
I'm surprised that Microsoft doesn't think you're running some kind of fraud.
I am shocked that my credit card like kept working. Like there's no way that they should have. Like my credit card gets rejected all the time for just the most random reasons.
But yeah, no, I haven't heard the fan. Like yeah. I probably have, but it's not noticeable. So
all right.
I will say the fans on the laptop 3 are also very tame. Yeah. Like even when they crank up, when I was doing like video export tests, they were significantly quieter than what I'm used to from like a MacBook Air or MacBook Pro.
Yeah, whereas previous models I've definitely heard.
Oh, yeah. I have a Surface Pro 4 at home that I bought a couple years ago. And every time I turn that thing on, it's a hurricane in my office.
Yeah, well, that's why I just assumed it was that bad. That's why I didn't want it. Where do we start with the Surface Pro X? Like, I don't even know where to start. There's so much to talk about here.
The design. Okay. Start with the simple stuff.
The simple stuff. It's black. It picks up fingerprints, whatever. The screen is great. I think it could stand to get brighter, especially in sunlight. Like it can't quite stand up to like direct sun, but they extended it out. So the thing is like, I think it's just a little bit bigger, like on the X and maybe Y axis than a Surface Pro 7, but it's thinner. The curves are a little bit gentler. The bezels on the left and the right are thinner. And I think they might be thinner on the top and the bottom, but not by much. And I actually am finding that I'm accidentally like touching the screen and it's not rejecting my touch when I'm like adjusting the kickstand. So I've had to use it. Like I've had to learn how to like hold the thing in such a way that I don't actually accidentally touch the screen when I'm adjusting it.
Yeah, because the bezels on either side are pretty thin.
They're really thin, yeah. But I said this in a review, and I actually want to expand on it a little bit. I think this looks better than an iPad Pro.
Yeah, I think it's more of a tablet for the Surface Pro than they've ever done before. Like it feels like a tablet first rather than a computer.
No, I'm curious as to why that is. Is it because it's thinner? Is it because they stretch the screen out? Is it because it's got the more rounded corners? It's not as angular.
I think it's all three of those.
Yeah,
it's just when you hold it, it just feels a lot different to the Pro.
There's a subtle line where it being thinner, not having that extra ridge, and like the sort of weight distribution that you expect from a tablet feels like a tablet. And whereas the Surface Pro 7 and all the Surface Pros before it, you can kind of tell that they're like fronting, you know, like it's a PC that they just happen to like put all the crap into one side, right? That's what a Surface Pro is. And this is the same thing, but for some reason it crosses that subtle line of feeling like a tablet. And the reason I think it looks better than an iPad Pro is because I think the iPad Pro looks okay. Like the curved screen is impressive, but the whole thing looks like someone drew their ideal tablet in like a CAD, program. They're like, what if this tablet was possible? Wouldn't that be amazing? And then they're like, well, it's possible now. So they made it, but it doesn't have like a soul. It's very, very generic and very sort of, I don't know, whatever character it has is like just the most like vanilla anodyne character I can imagine. Whereas this thing, like, it's not like beefy, powerful, but it has like an identity in a way that I feel like the iPad doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like, from the keyboard side, it's still, I mean, I obviously had issues with the keyboard.
Oh, man, we're going to talk about this for, like, 45 minutes.
But, like, it's still the best 2-in-1 keyboard, right? Like, there's no, yeah. no one's really doing that because of that kickstand combination. Like, no one has really done that well.
Yeah.
And certainly not on the iPad Pro. Like, that is, it's a kind of frustrating keyboard. And it's just the one, the single angle stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just irritating. But yeah, like, the design. Yeah. I like the design. I like the hardware, but it's not really, the hardware isn't the thing.
No.
Before we jump into, like, the thing that we really want to talk about, how you mentioned that it's like, it looks more like a tablet, feels more like, how is it actually using as a tablet? Did you guys actually use it much, ripping that keyboard off and, like, getting out of the Windows desktop world and, like, trying to use it as a tablet? Is it any better?
No.
Not significantly.
It's, I mean, Windows, it's on a tablet, right?
So. It's still big. And it's still like, yeah. you, man, like getting, like, Kindle to go on it is like a fiasco because, like, the Windows Store version still, like, this happens on the Surface Pro 7, like just doesn't work. And so you need to go to, like, Amazon and download it directly, and you have to, like, check out. You have to, like, buy it, like, purchase it through Amazon standard checkout workflow and then download it. Like, it, like, you purchased, like, toilet paper. It's the most anyway. But yeah, so carrying it, like, actually, I found myself using it in portrait mode as a tablet more so than I expected, just because the bezels on the left and the right were so thin, and it was more comfortable to carry in portrait mode. So it's like, mm-hmm. like that clipboard mode sort of thing. So that's how I was using it as just a tablet. But yeah, like, fundamentally, like, you know how you use a Surface, you leave the keyboard on, and that's what you end up doing
right.
with this.
Well, yeah, I guess. And you're saying the Pro X does not change that paradigm.
Not really. I mean, it is a little bit. It does. I think it's, like, about the same weight, but it feel, like I said, like, the weight distribution feels more tablet-y, but it's not, like, a huge change. Like, if you buy this thing and you don't buy the keyboard, you're a ridiculous person.
Yeah. Well, it's that thing between, like, the iPad and Windows tablets. It's always that sort of push and pull, right? Like, it's the iPad, you go for it because it's great as a tablet, but it's not quite as good as a desktop, you know, laptop sort of thing.
This comes down to, like, Windows has the crutch of there's always a touchpad, right? And so people aren't forced to design stuff that's touch friendly. And the touchpad on the keyboards on all surfaces are, like, I'm happy that it's there, but I wish it was, like, always 10% bigger all the time. I find that maybe it's because I don't use Windows enough, but I find that I get way more, like, accidental drags in Windows than I ever do on a Mac. Like, I'll, like, think I'm tapping on a window, and then all of a sudden I'm, like, dragging it across the screen, and it's, like, screwed up my window snapping and everything is gone. Like, happens to me all the time. And I don't know if it's muscle memory or what.
There is actually a way to stop that. So there's two settings that they enable on the trackpad on the Surface. And you should just disable them. I can't remember exactly what they are.
There's, like, a three-finger thing. Well, no, there's one in the top level, and then there's one where you, like, need to go all the way back into classic Windows settings. I've, like, poked around at it, and I forget what they're called too. But
there's two that I go in and I just untick them.
Yeah,
and then I never have those issues. But it just feels like they shouldn't really stop there. It's something like two-finger drag and drop, like that. It's something like that. But that always triggers badly.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Lowe's.com.
I guess before we get into ARM, because that's the whole shooting match here, I think that the Surface Slim Pen itself is pretty good. I think that people that really like styli are probably might get a little tired using it because it isn't as, you know, it's thin, basically, slim. But in terms of like its overall performance, like I have zero complaints about it. And I love that it charges magnetically inside this little keyboard slot. I didn't realize this, but when you buy it separately, if you don't buy it in the bundle with the keyboard that charges it, it comes with like a little cradle that you plug in via USB-C. So if
just
you
like a cot.
Yeah.
Like where it goes to sleep.
Yeah. So if you buy this pen to use like a Surface Pro or whatever, you like have to make sure you don't lose the cradle, which is just nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can actually stick it to the side of the Pro 7.
Yep.
If you like it sort of, you know, falling off occasionally.
Yeah, if you like it to get knocked off in your bag.
Well, I mean, that's how the old stylus works with the Pro 7. So yes. You're not really missing anything.
It like just about hangs on in there.
The magnet on the side of the Pro X is actually really strong for sticking the pen on the side of it. It's on the right side, which I prefer because I'm right-handed. So then, Tom, so the way this pen works is it goes in this little slot that's above the keys, and then when you fold it up to magnetically attach to the screen, it like hides it. But you hate this keyboard.
Whoa.
Those were not my words.
I'm just going off of what you said in Slack, and we had a long argument about it.
So I feel like it's a step back. For sure. Like, so I think it was the Pro 4, right? Where they did the like sort of magnets where where it, like that little onto the screen.
Yep.
And this has that, but it also has like a tiny, like I say like 5 mil or something like that, of like where it just flexes.
Yeah.
And I think like if you're a super skinny individual, then it's probably fine. But if you have a beer belly, like I do, then you will probably squidge that screen up against that keyboard up against the display more than you'd like to.
Yeah.
And I think it also depends on how you're using it and where you're using it and stuff. But I still find it like irritating. And I think that's because I like to see what apps are open.
Yeah, same.
And I like to see the notifications and stuff.
Yeah, so the bar that shows you that the app is open, it's really easy to get hidden. If you're like using it on a desk and you're looking down on it, you see it. And to be clear, I've got a little bit of a beer belly too. But I didn't have this problem, and I think it's because we sit differently. And so I think the answer is that you're lapping it wrong.
Panos would tell me that the lappability is fine and I'm sitting wrong.
Yeah, but that wobble, you do notice it a little bit like on your lap, like it does shift just a little bit more than
And I think the worst thing is you know how like you use the Pro, you kind of adjust yourself to it rather than it adjusts to you. And I think the worst thing is sometimes like you and you're sitting like might be cross-legged or you know whatever, you've got it like rested in a particular way.
Yeah.
Like the keyboard kind of goes a bit wonky at the screen. So like half of it gets cut off and the other half doesn't on the taskbar. It's just, I don't know. Like I haven't tried the other keyboard.
Yeah, I wish they had sent us the other keyboard, because if the other keyboard's fine, we would be having a totally different conversation right now.
And I can't buy it in the UK until like the 19th. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. But yeah, like I feel like that's probably fine. But it's just one thing to like keep in mind if you're used to Surface Pros at all, because I feel like this keyboard just feels like you know the same sort of 2-in-1 stuff that other people do when they kind of rip the Surface off. Like the other people, the other OEMs and stuff, don't always get that like hook to the screen.
Yeah.
Basically, the takeaway from this is if you are like buying a Pro X and you're not interested in using the stylus, which is actually, I guess, the vast majority of Surface users don't actually use the stylus, then just forget about the new stylus and the new keyboard and just go with the older design.
And the older keyboard is cheaper anyway.
Yeah.
You really need to want the pen. So
the only thing keeping us from saying that definitively is we haven't tried it. It's possible that they screwed up that keyboard also. We just don't know. I'm assuming they haven't, because why would they? But they might have, because they're Microsoft.
Well, the other thing to note, I guess, is if you are upgrading from an older Surface Pro, like a Pro 4 or newer, your keyboard will not work with the Pro 10 the Pro X. So
the older Pro keyboards have like two little plastic like tabs, and then there's like pogo pins, and this keyboard has two fins, and then the connectors are on like one of the fins.
Mm-hmm. So you're buying a new keyboard either way.
Yeah,
they had to redesign that because they were obviously going for a thinner device. So,
but you can still flip the thing like underneath and like back, and then like the pen sort of is like sitting there. So you might lose it if you do that, but it works. You can still flip it around and put it into tablet mode. And you can still like reverse the keyboard entirely for people that do that. I don't know many people that do, but you can if you want to. Okay. So this computer has a Microsoft SQ1, which is a modified version of the Qualcomm 8CX. There's only one other 8CX laptop that I know of, which is like that Samsung Surface Book, which hasn't even come out. So this is basically the first, as far as this yes. first one I've touched. And so the Microsoft customization, Tom, what is the customization that they've done on top of the 8CX here? Like, what do they feel like they needed to do?
So they clocked the cores slightly higher, I think up to 3 gigahertz. And then they did some GPU work to increase the GPU performance, essentially.
Why is it called SQ1?
I guess Surface and Qualcomm SQ.
Oh, so next year they have an SQ2, Surface Qualcomm 2.
There it is. Okay, so that makes perfect sense. Why is this called the Surface Pro X?
Why is the Xbox One? That's just what I tweeted to you. Why is the Xbox One X called that? I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know. They obviously like the X naming because they've used 10X on the Neo stuff.
Yeah, but 10X, when Neo, the 10X on Neo is a different kind of Windows that has nothing to do with ARM. It has to do with like dual screen. So Windows 10X means like it works on dual screen. Maybe it'll mean something else by the time it comes out, but that's what it means to me now. The Xbox One X means we are the super powerful Xbox, and the Surface Pro X means, I don't know. Is like, does Microsoft just think like X means like future? Like,
I think it does, yeah. Yeah. But and if you view it in that way, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
What they're trying to say, but
I want to call it the Pro 10 though. What happens when we get to what do we have? The Pro 7 was released this year.
Yep.
Next year's a Pro 8, then the Pro 9, and we're gonna have a Pro 10.
That'll be fine.
And we're also gonna have like an X3.
Sure.
But maybe that'll be once they can finally get to this design on the Surface Pro 7 side.
Yeah.
We've got 3 years left.
They'll call it the XI. And then everybody will call it the 11 by accident, you know, because it'll be the Intel version of the X. It'll be X. Anyway. All right. So the basics here is Microsoft has made Windows work on ARM. And Windows itself is like designed for ARM now. It like works fine as an ARM operating system, I think. We can get into that if you want a little bit. But then for the apps, there are 3 kinds of apps to think about. 4 maybe. There's apps that are directly compiled for ARM, and they are few and far between. There are 32-bit Intel apps, or x86 apps, not Intel apps, and those can be run in an emulated mode. And I forget the name of the emulator now. It's like it's not Wine. It's something else.
I can't remember what it's called.
But for some reason...
Yeah, the system just runs them. You don't actually have to like open an emulator and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just runs them.
And then it is unable to handle emulation for 64-bit x86 apps, which are... the one that matters to me is Lightroom, but there's a bunch of them that just like, oh, you're not going to do it. And then the other category of apps I guess we could talk about are, we're calling them UWP apps now, like basically Microsoft Store apps, which in theory, since they followed Microsoft's rules for existing in the store, will just work because they're 32 or their ARM, I think. And so in theory, the idea here is, absent a couple of wacky exceptions, and then all games, except for Angry Birds, whatever you install here, it just works. You don't have to think about it. Microsoft handled all of the problems of the transition from Intel to ARM. That's the theory. The practice that I found is, man, I don't even know where to start. The 32-bit Intel apps or x86 apps run much, much better than I expected, but I expected just it to be terrible, but it actually was like, okay, like iTunes ran, like Chrome ran, and like it didn't feel like hellaciously slow. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Apple made the Intel transition from PowerPC or whatever it was way back in the day, and you could definitely tell when something was running emulated. This doesn't feel like that. This feels like pretty good. But over the course of an entire day, there are like 1,000 tiny cuts that like it's fine when you're just using it. You're like, oh, yeah, this is great. No problem. But then there's just like, huh, I just woke the computer up and everything's really slow and I don't know why. Or, huh, this battery isn't as good as I expect it to be and I don't know why. There's just like little things that add up to right? Like any individual thing, you look at it, you look at Chrome and like you've got 10 tabs open, you're like, huh, this works. But then you like you just go back to like, you know, Edge, and you're like, oh, this works way better.
Yeah, I had the same sort of thing. I think the problem was you'd load one emulated app and it'd be fine. You know, you'd use it, I know, like Chrome. Load another one on, yeah, fine. And then by the time you've got to like, you know, five or six going, then it all just starts to like grind in places, mm-hmm. Where you're multitasking and stuff. And I think that is the problem. It's obviously the emulation layer, what they're using here is, you know, it's very capable, but you know, it's not designed so that every single damn app that you run on the thing is, you know, supposed to be emulated. So the idea is that hopefully these apps will go to ARM64 and be natively running on the thing. And so we install Chrome because everyone uses Chrome. Mm-hmm. We just use Edge to get Chrome. that's the meme. So we did that, and yeah, like it was not great. But the Edge Chromium, we got a copy of that, the ARM64 version. And Lord, it's like night and day.
Yeah.
In terms of like both performance and battery life, right? Like, because using all the emulated apps really takes a hit on your battery.
Yeah, it takes a hit, and it just slows everything down. Like, you can try Photoshop on this thing. You're literally like,
oh God, it's so bad.
You could just watch it almost frame by frame. Mm-hmm. It feels like just rendering to try and do a new document. And it's just try zooming in, try multiple layers, like try different font work. Like, it's just... Yeah, it's not good. And that's just for basic editing. I can't imagine if you tried to load a gig PSD on it. But yeah, just good luck with that. but a lot of the stuff that you will run on here, or like a lot of the core and key stuff on desktop machines now is run through the browser. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the slowdowns and the problems we were seeing on Chrome and whatever is because it's emulated. So yeah, as soon as I started using that Edge Chromium, I was like, oh, like...
Just to clarify, Tom, the Edge Chromium is not officially out. You were able to get a copy of it through some sources. Do we have any idea when that is going to be released? Is it coming out in January with the Edge final release?
So Microsoft won't say.
Yeah, we asked them over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's definitely not coming out on January 15th publicly. Like, the final version of Chrome, Edge Chromium's coming out then. But the ARM64 version won't be released, like stable channel.
Yeah.
Won't be released then.
And I don't think like Chromium itself, there's a couple of builds that are 64-bit ARM working, but like there's not like a stable build out there, or even a beta build of just like straight up Chromium that you can go get.
No, it's not quite right. There's some sort of blocker bug, apparently. Mm-hmm. But apparently it should, well, from what I know, is that it should be going to Canary soon. So there will be a build that you can officially download from Microsoft,
yeah,
rather than the ones that are sort of floating around, and you'll be able to use that on the Pro X. But they should, like, the builds are okay. Like, occasionally the tabs crash, but they should have had this ready, you know? Like, everyone should be able to download this on the Pro X and then get going right now, because it feels completely different with it.
So my battery life, I characterize it as around 6, maybe 7 hours of active use. Microsoft's battery estimates, everybody does it differently, but now Microsoft is saying, like, it'll last this long, like, total, like, if you know, when you're, like, at lunch and blah, 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 and they clock it at 13, which actually, if you think about it, isn't that much. And I was not quite getting that.
They're also doing it at very low screen brightnesses.
Very low screen brightness, yeah. So, yeah. So I was, like, pretty disappointed with battery life. And now maybe... I don't know. Like, I think actually I'm getting better battery life on even like the Surface Pro 7 than I am on this thing. But I was also just using it like a computer. But if you use it with the 64-bit version of Edge, apparently it gets way better battery life. I haven't done this as full-time as you have, Tom, though.
So I've tried to exclusively use native ARM64 stuff. Although that's not strictly true, actually. I've been using UWP stuff and the browser.
Okay.
But I've not used anything like, you know, Discord or Chrome or anything else that is running emulated. So I've running stuff from the store or the browser. And yeah, like, what was it? Let me check my notes. It was draining probably about 10% an hour.
Right, which is incredible, which is what
Should
you expect.
Be about 10 hours. Yeah. Yeah, like 10 hours is what I expected.
Of real use, yeah. 10 hours of like real solid use, yeah.
If it hits 10 hours, that's damn good.
Yeah, that's about what I get when I'm really truly using an iPad Pro, like my 11-inch. Yeah. The 13-whatever-inch is probably lasts a little bit longer. But like the iPad Pro seems to last forever, but when you're actually like doing work, especially stuff mm-hmm. like conference calls, which kills the iPad battery for some reason, it ends up running around 10 hours. So like that's actually comparable.
Yeah, I feel like 10 hours is on the edge of like where I'd be like, you know, this is probably worth the compromises and some of the, you know, the slowdowns in the other apps. maybe.
Yeah. Well, Dan, the point you keep bringing up is there's like you have different metrics for what's acceptable for battery life. So battery life on a, like a pretty big chunky laptop that you know you're going to be walking around an office with, it's like that's one thing. But a battery light on an ultra portable is something different.
Yeah. You know, I think that actually the battery expectations for a device like the Pro X or the iPad Pro or even a laptop that is very thin and light that's designed to go with you everywhere you need to go are actually higher than say like your average run-of-the-mill laptop that you are probably parking at a desk for a long time. Mm-hmm. Because these computers are meant to go wherever you are and always be accessible and be used. So like in the example of the Pro X, it's got built-in LTE, which is like something I've wanted on every laptop for the past 5 years, which means that I can use it when I'm not in a Wi-Fi environment and I'm not near an outlet. So like I actually have higher demands of the battery for something like that than I do for say a MacBook Pro that's sitting on a desk all day long anyways. And so when we're talking about these battery life expectations and when we're like getting disappointed by them and things like that, like sure, I can kill a MacBook Pro in 7 hours, just like you can kill this Pro 10 or Pro X in 7 hours. I keep saying Pro 10. But yeah, getting 10 hours out of the Pro 10 really, the Pro X really helps fulfill that dream of this computer that is always accessible, always with me, always on the go. It doesn't limit me to where I need to be to use it.
Okay. So if we're talking about categories, like when I talk to Microsoft about it, I'm like, this is like an executive computer. It's a CEO computer. It's not an engineer's computer. They're like, yep, that's exactly right. Yep. Like this is a C-suite computer. And like we felt we sort of described like the very first MacBook that way, you know, like it's a little bit underpowered, but like you're a cool guy if you have this super thin light computer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to feel that way about this, and I kind of do, especially if you like live in office. But it's like, at what point are you like, well, it doesn't run this, but that's okay. It doesn't run this, but that's okay. It doesn't run this, but man, that just, what the hell, right? And if I could tell you where that line was on this thing for you, I would tell you go ahead and buy it as long as you can stay within those limits. But because of that like ARM variable, you never really know if it's going to run the thing that you want without doing a ton of research. And then even if you do that research, so few people are going to have this, you won't really know if it runs that thing that you need well until you spend the $1,800, because you shouldn't buy the $1,000 version. You should buy the $1,800 version. Until you spend $1,800, you just don't know. And that's nuts. Yeah,
that's the biggest problem with it.
If they had done this as like the Surface Go, you know, tiny little computer, different kind of thing. It's going to be slow, but it's small, so you're not going to get mad at it if it doesn't run Photoshop or whatever. And it costs $800. I'd be like, huh, yeah, there's like actually a lot of people that like, even if it doesn't run the thing they need, for $800, they've got like an ultra portable computer that has LTE. That's great. But $1,800, man, that's just, I don't know.
And when we're saying $1,800, we're including the cost of the keyboard.
Yes.
Probably the pen if you're buying that as well. We're upgrading to the more storage because the base model has like menial storage.
Well, it's the storage, but it's the RAM. The RAM is the main thing. And I think it's like $1,650, maybe $1,700 to get the cheaper keyboard. So I'm overstating it a little bit, but not much, man, because
yeah, nobody's walking out the door paying $1,000. Like,
yeah,
because you have to buy the keyboard to use this. So the reality is you're paying a lot.
And if it's just that if there were no other computers in the world, we'd have one conversation. But think about the Windows computer, how much Windows computer you can get for like $1,600.
You can get so much.
Right.
So I'm going to give a little teaser. I'm working on a review of the latest XPS 13, which has a 6-core Intel processor in it. It is like the most powerful 13-inch laptop I might have ever tested.
Yeah.
And it has a 4K touchscreen. It's got 16 gigs of RAM. It's got 512 gigs of storage, battery life of like 7-8 hours or what have you. And it's, I think, $1,600.
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, Tom, the thing that's driving me crazy, though, is now that I've got this leak of this, you know, 64-bit thing, I use a Chromebook all the time. And so if I literally only use a 64-bit Edge and just make app versions of every single app that open up in separate windows and just use this as a Chromebook that happens to have Office if I really need it, I'm like kind of like, oh, this is
it's
great.
It's actually all right, right?
Yeah. Like, it's like they made the Chrome OS tablet that Google should have, right?
Yeah, that, I think that's kind of what it is.
It just costs you $1,700 or $1,800.
Yeah, so you know, you should totally go buy this if you're willing to spend $1,800 and use leaked beta software and nothing else. Sure, go for it. Like, come on.
So the other thing that I've seen people say is like, oh, there's no apps. And, you know, it's like Windows RT and Windows Phone all over again. Like, that's one thing I've seen. But, like, I think that's fair to say. Definitely, like, you know, it's like Windows RT again. But the slight difference here, and the only slight hope, is that people don't have to create entirely new apps for this, right?
Right.
Like, Microsoft's not saying you have to do this and this. You have to recompile your app to ARM64, which, you know, it's not a simple task, but it's not as crazy as going and building a UWP app,
right,
or a Windows Phone app.
Yeah, and I think that the key difference is that when people say there's no apps, and we discussed this already, but there's just the pro level apps that, you know, on a device that has pro in the name, that costs this price, and you can't run Lightroom on it. You're going to have a real hard time running Photoshop. I couldn't recommend this for a student in STEM classes because they're not going to be able to run any code compiling software that they need to use, things like that. So, like, that pro level that puts the pro in this name is what's missing here. There is, as we've said, you know, you can use the browser for 95% of your things.
Yeah.
You can, you know, use Office and things like that. There's a lot of, like, you know, Twitters and utility apps or whatever.
Yeah, but even Office is running 32-bit. Office is running in 32-bit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's that's crazy.
Even
right?
Microsoft can't get this stuff recompiled to ARM. Like, come on. Yeah. For me, it's not necessarily the app availability. It's the app unpredictability. It's that you just never know what you're going to get when you click on an icon.
Yeah, that is a problem. And I think that's also the problem is that they've called it a Pro, a Surface Pro. So you have expectations knowing what a Surface Pro is.
And at this price point, like, you have expectations.
Yeah. Oh, they called it an X. You have expectations of what an X is. I mean, Microsoft is so consistent in its use of the letter X in its products. Just to wrap up, Microsoft did this whole big Ignite IT thing conference, and I was expecting it to be a snoozer, but then I woke up one morning and Tom had posted 35 things to the site. and it, like, there's a big shift happening, and I am trying to figure out what Microsoft's plan is for Windows apps, basically, and just for, like, yeah, Windows apps and, like, its whole system for how it wants developers to interact with the stuff that it makes. Because, you know, we make fun of them, rightly so, for jumping from Metro to Windows Store to UWP to blah, 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 and every time they do one of these shifts, they get, like, a couple big companies to go along for the ride, and then they're like, well, that didn't work, and then they bail. Like, S-Mode is another great example. Like, Dropbox is available in S-Mode on the Surface Pro X. But S-Mode isn't even a thing, but the name of Dropbox in the store is Dropbox for S-Mode, but, like, Microsoft doesn't even have S-Mode anymore.
It's also, like, fake Dropbox.
I love it. So there's this Fluid framework, which we got to talk about a little bit, but is Microsoft trying to make UWP apps anymore? Are they trying to make 64-bit apps for ARM? Are they just, like, saying, screw it, we're only just going to do classic Windows apps because that seems to be what they decided with OneNote? Or are they making web apps? Are they doing all of the above? Tom, just please tell me the answer so I can stop wondering.
Oh God, if I knew,
damn it.
I would. but as anything with Microsoft, it's far more complicated. But I think the overall thing is that the UWP stuff was for a different era. It was for when they were, you know, going off the phone. They wanted it to run on Xbox. They had this vision of an app that would run everywhere, hence Universal, part of that name.
Yeah, so the UWP, I'm sorry, if you don't know, it stands for, I think, Universal Windows Platform? Platform, yeah. And so the idea was you could write once, run anywhere. But it's you make an app, you put it in the Microsoft Store, and it'll work on Windows tablets, Windows laptops, and also Windows phones. And
Xbox and HoloLens,
and it you know, it has a consistent UI across all these things, and it's a beautiful dream world. And they got you know, tens of developers to do it.
Yeah, and so the majority of that dream has gone away. Right, the phone has gone away. That was the key bridge.
Right.
And the Xbox stuff is just like, yeah, whatever. And HoloLens is still developing. We'll see what happens. And the other part of it is that these things only run on Windows 10. And they had, you know, millions of people still using Windows 7. So to convince even enterprise app developers to, you know, refactor their apps into this, it's just not going to happen when it can't run on the vast majority of desktops.
Right.
So I think that's kind of held the legacy of the enterprise and stuff from Microsoft always holds them back on everything because they're always trying to appease everything for businesses. And that's just, you know, that's just the nature of their business. And I think that's what we're seeing now. So like the OneNote stuff they announced this week, they announced basically OneNote 2016, which is a desktop app, is coming back to life.
Yeah.
And it's going to get a bunch of features.
Yeah. If you're not familiar, there's OneNote 2016 hanging around, and then they made the new like UWP basically version of OneNote that was like the future. And like if you had a Surface Pro and you like tapped the screen, it would open up that version of OneNote. And like, or I think, yeah. And so it was like...
And it's really nice. The UWP app is like one of the better ones.
It was in fact the app that I recommended as the best note-taking app on Windows. Yeah. And OneNote general being the OneNote best note-taking app, especially if you're cross-platform.
Yeah.
And so I was expecting them, okay, well, eventually what they're going to do is they're going to get all of Office onto this new platform. It's going to be great. They just need to like add a few more features, and maybe some stuff will like fall by the wayside when they make the transition, and that's okay because life moves on. But instead, they just totally like backtracked and retrenched. They said, yeah, that thing's done. We're just going back to the old 2016 version of OneNote to go along with the old, you know, versions of Office. It's very confusing.
Yeah, so they're going back to it, and I think what they're going to do is they're merging the codebase underlying codebase, and then I think they're going to bring a bunch of those cool new features over to this old desktop app.
Right.
But I don't really know what's going to happen to, you know, the new app. Like, they say it's going to still exist,
yep.
But, you know, why? Microsoft loves having two apps for everything. There's Internet Explorer, there's Edge on Windows 10, there's two Skype apps.
There's like Windows Mail and Outlook, like proper Outlook.
So it's just, I think it's going to be another one of those scenarios. I don't know.
Love it.
But underlying all of this is that about a year ago, I think it was, they said they were going to put their new touch-friendly UWP versions of Office, which are really nice as well. Those things launch in like less than a second.
Mm-hmm.
They're crazy basic. They're just, you'd use them every day. It's not the word that you're used to. Those are on hold, and they were going to focus on Win32, which is the desktop, and web.
Yep.
And the only exception was OneNote until now. So I feel like they are going to focus a heck of a lot on the web for the stuff that they were trying to achieve with UWP, like that original dream. And everything else, like, you know, the legacy and keeping their business customers happy, desktop, Win32, allowing devs to just kind of go wild, do what you want, you know? Like, I think that's their thing now. Just do whatever you need to do to get your app in the store and whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned this on the yesterday's Vergecast, or the Vergecast we recorded yesterday. It does seem like there's a little bit of Microsoft is trying to make sure that Google doesn't completely dominate everything on the web. They're actually like trying to like get back in there a little bit, which I like. I'm actually kind of excited about, to have like a little bit of competition in web apps and web stuff. It's just too bad that it's all based on Chromium, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, and the other part of their announcements, they're previewing the fluid frameworks stuff, which is essentially just like modular version of like documents. So instead of having, you know, a Word document, you'd have like a cloud space where everyone, you know, plugs into. And I think the idea is that they'll be able to have this stuff in all the different apps and services, and AI and other apps can just plug into this cloud document and, you know, do whatever they need to do on it. And that, I think, like, that is an interesting concept for the future of the web in general. And whether they can pull it off, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to live my entire life inside, you know, the Azure X, because they're going to add X to the end of Azure at some point soon, because Microsoft.
Windows in the cloud.
Yeah.
And I'm going to mispronounce it to Azure 10.
Of course. All right. We've run a little bit longer than I intended to. We've all got to get out of here. Final thoughts. Mine is I bought a Surface Pro 7, and I love my life, except for the trackpad.
Mine is, I'm so tempted by the Pro X, but I'm only tempted because I'm like hopeful that it'll get better.
Yeah, ugh, man.
And that's not a good temptation, right?
Yep, so. same exact boat. Yep.
Mine is that the editorial I wrote in December of 2016 is still unfulfilled.
Wait, what was? Nobody knows what you're talking about.
In 2016, December 2016 was when Microsoft first announced that ARM support would be coming to Windows.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I wrote that gives them the opportunity to build the perfect Surface Pro with integrated LTE, great battery life, and great performance.
Yeah.
And they had to have all of those things across the board. And they kind of did half the battery life. They did LTE, and they missed on the performance.
No.
So I'm still waiting for that.
Dan, you're wrong. They built your dream Surface. It's here. It just, like, it breaks if you install anything on it.
Yeah, you've just got to test it for the next 3 years. Once the Surface Pro 3X or whatever is out, that'll be the one.
I mean, this is why I called my review Heartbreaker, because, like, this is the right thing. They made the right thing. And they don't have it breaks if you run 32 bit, too many 32-bit apps.
They left the
on
pro
it.
Out. Yeah. Like at the end of that yeah. editorial I wrote, the most important thing that Microsoft has to do is keep the pro in the pro in the Surface Pro. And that means it has to perform like a pro yep. computer. And it yeah. doesn't do that. So
all right. Well, everybody, Tom, Dan, thank you for doing this bonus episode with me. Where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at DC Seifert.
S-E-I?
S-E-I, yes.
And I am at Tom Warren.
And I am at Backlon. And I'm really curious. We always leave review stuff on the cutting room floor, just we can't write 10,000 word reviews. So it was really fun to do this little bonus episode, just going really deep on all the stuff we couldn't talk about in the video or the written review. So let me know what you think of this. Please hit me up on Twitter. And actually, speaking of Twitter, on Twitter, you will find a link. I tweeted it. Dan tweeted it to job posting. Dan, tell us about that.
Yeah, so if you love these kind of discussions and having them about laptops and PCs and these kind of debates and testing all this stuff, I'm looking for somebody who is a laptop PC expert to join my reviews team and really own this coverage of laptops, everything from reviews to how-tos and buying guides and even the hot take and editorial. So if that's you, go please check out my Twitter. The link is there to apply. I look forward to seeing it.
All right, that's the show. There are a bunch of other great Vox Media podcast, Empire podcasts to talk about. There's too many, so I'm just going to plug Reset with Ariel Jahim Ross. It is a wonderful show, which I actually might appear on relatively soon, so keep an eye out for that. Anywhere fine podcasts are found. We're also going to have, of course, standard Vergecast stuff. We've got the interview episode with Neli. We're going to have the chat show again. And then over Thanksgiving, we're going to do some weird stuff. Pirate Radio, there's going to be a zine. It's going to be wild, so stay tuned for all that. Thanks for listening, everybody. Rock and roll.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.